I've done my share of interviews over the years with a few questions that keep getting asked. And although I answer them as politely as I can, it is mind-numbing. Questions like, what are your influences? Do you like playing festivals more or clubs more? And the all-time favorite, how do you write a song? Granted, some of the people asking show genuine curiosity, but most of the time, these are questions asked with feigned interest and are just there to basically fill the void. But as much as I've rolled my eyes inwardly every time it's asked, I find myself with very similar questions when it comes to comedians. I am fascinated with stand-up comedy and the people brave enough to make it their vocation, or in most cases, their pastime. There's a lot of banter in between the songs of our live show, so I've been able to get a taste of what it could be like. But to stand there by yourself, delivering lines that are meant to be funny but not sure of the nightly response, it all strikes me as emotionally exhausting. I can never be a stand-up comedian, so my interest for the craft is tenfold. When I find myself in between two comedians talking about the process, I relish the moments because it's a conversation I rarely get to listen in on. Past episodes with Jason Rouse, Scott Thompson, and Sean Cullen were such moments. The proliferation of comedy podcasting has satiated this need to an extent, but I want to insert my perspective on it, and thus this podcast and this podcast episode with comedian Fraser Young. It was actually my idea to bring in Fraser, but Nick, who is friends with him, hooked this whole thing up. Fraser is a hilarious guy, a great comedian, currently writing for the show George Strombolopoulos Tonight on CBC in Canada. I've seen him pretty much floor a room, and everyone out there should own his comedy record, Everyone Loves a Smug Bastard. You can get it on iTunes or his website, youngfraser.com. As with most of our visiting on the road podcasts, this one didn't come without its tribulations. Scheduling conflicts only allowed for an after office hours recording, and so it was decided that Nick and I journey to the CBC building to record on Fraser's home turf. It seemed easy enough until we found ourselves in a 15-minute Spinal Tap-esque maze of construction and locked doors. When we finally got to Fraser's area, we immediately sat down and hatched this out. I must say, this is a podcast episode for people truly interested in the process of comedy. It's an interesting insider's vantage point. I eat this kind of stuff up, but other people might not, so listener beware. This episode is one of the reasons why I partnered up with Nick Flanagan for this podcast in the first place, the chance to discuss the process of comedy. I would like to thank our sponsors, Blue Mic Microphones and Skull Candy Headphones. Yeti Mics and Mixmaster Mic Headphones and Aviator Headphones make this podcast go round. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, Fraser Young is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now.
Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, in case you want to know what that stands for and you don't have the time to wiki.
Yeah,
who has time to wiki?
I've always got time.
We're here with Fraser Young.
Hi, everyone.
Comedian extraordinaire and writer for the George Strombo Show. Do I have that?
Yes, or George Strombolopoulos Tonight, but everyone calls it Strombo.
Basically. And also for the hour before that.
Yes, it was the hour.
So and people. He's written for some Canadian award shows.
Yes.
And he has an album out called Everybody Loves a Smug Bastard.
Yes.
And I have that record. I've had it for a few years.
Oh, that record?
Really?
Yeah. I never knew.
Yeah. And I've seen you perform live a few times, actually.
Yeah, okay.
In the past. And I always thought you were quite funny.
Thank you.
And
I'm really digging this so far.
Well, the fact that I packed up the mics, the blue mics, and came down here, it was because we needed to get you on the podcast.
I very much appreciate this. Look at me. Come on, world, huh?
I've never had Danko come to my house with the microphones.
I've never been invited to your house.
What house?
I was actually thinking about that today. How we've never been to. Yeah. I live in a place now until March.
congratulations.
I feel very privileged being here. We've gotten kind of not the red carpet treatment here, but more like the beige carpet treatment. I mean, there's a carpet here.
Yeah.
That it's we not got, beige. We it's gray. I want to make that clear.
There's carpet on the walls.
And, you know, we're in the CBC building. It's after hours, so there's nobody here, especially, like, George isn't here. Strombo's
George is not here. We can go in Trash's office. Guys, it's going to be amazing.
It's going to be awesome.
I'd love to do that. He would probably think it was punk and respect us.
Yeah, I think he would find it funny.
For a lot of people who are listening to the podcast, they might not know who George Strombolopoulos is. In Canada, George is a very well-known, he started off as a DJ, and then he moved into music television, became a talking head VJ there.
Yeah.
And then the CBC, which is kind of like the BBC of Canada, gave him his own show. And maybe 5-6 years ago now?
I think this is season 9.
Whoa.
Of him doing it. Yeah.
Time flies.
Okay.
Yeah. Time flies.
9 years ago.
And how long have you been working with him now?
This is my second season.
But you've been working with him for...
No, actually, I really just met him last year in September.
But were you at the hour before that?
No, I never did the hour. Okay. And
earlier, I said you wrote for the hour.
No, the show used to be called the hour, and then then it went down to a half hour like 2 years ago. So they started calling it George Strombolopoulos.
You can't call it the hour.
Yeah, you're gonna lose some credibility there.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, so I've been on here the last 2 years, and I wrote for him as well when he hosted the Genies last year.
Right. So how did you meet George, and how did you get this writing job for the Strombo show?
This was the kind of thing where it was just pure agent. Like, you know how you have that thing where it's like a lot of the gigs you get are always, you were going to get it anyway, and then you bring it to your agent, and then they get the percentage. This one was pure, I never heard a whisper of it, and just my agent gave me a call and said, we submitted you for Strombo, and they want to meet with you. So we went through there, and bing, bing, you know.
And this is your writing agent.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And can I get a recommendation?
Yes, I think I think that you should submit a package. Yeah, that's my recommendation to you.
Okay, what kind of package are you talking? Me?
Your package. Just submit it.
A photo of my package.
Yeah.
I forgot to tell you that this podcast also doubles as a way for Nick to kind of move his career forward.
I was thinking about that today, too.
He's got 7 business cards on the table right now. Exactly. I'm looking at all of them. They're wonderful.
None of them are mine. Yeah. They're all busty lady business cards.
We met years ago, I don't know if you remember this, through a mutual friend of ours who's also a comedian, John Cattucci.
He's a wonderful, wonderful man.
And John Cattucci, for all the people who don't live in Canada, also has a TV show right now on the Food Network, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And it's called You Gotta Eat Here.
Yes, I think it's called Yeah, Gotta Eat Here.
Yeah, Gotta Eat Here.
And I think he's also, his comedy act was, I don't know if it's still up and running, but the Doo-Wops, which is a duo.
Yeah, I don't know if they're doing as much stuff together right now, but I love those guys.
And so me and JC, who's in our band, we both went down to check John out because JC and Cattucci are very good friends.
Right.
And Cattucci was telling me that we should check out the headliner, who was you. And we stuck around.
Where was this?
Very impressed. This was around the King and...
Laugh Resort.
Probably
would have
been
at the Laugh Resort.
Yeah. It's underneath the Holiday Inn at the time.
Exactly,
it was the Holiday Inn. And so very impressed. And then I saw you again at some bar on Jarvis, I want to say. And
it's so
comedy.
Sad that we just want to think so hard about what bar this could possibly be.
Yeah, exactly. After the comedy show, it was... Rock and Roll Karaoke. Because I remember it was you and John Cattucci and JC and Nug, who is another comedian.
Yes,
Nug is funny.
Cattucci.
Yeah.
So, and then I guess just trying to be an attention whore at the end of the night for Rock and Roll Karaoke. I mean, hey, I'm going to participate.
I have sung on stage before.
Right.
Yeah.
But I didn't sing. I wanted to play drums. And I don't know how to play drums, and I chose Stairway to Heaven to play drums.
well,
that's what I remember.
Drum
from
karaoke?
Drum. Well, the band played Stairway to Heaven, and I sang and played drums.
Oh,
yeah,
wow. That's
you
good.
Can pretty. I mean, if it's rock and roll karaoke, you can pretty much.
If there's a bustle in your hedgehog.
I made up the lyrics
that.
Whenever
I don't know.
If there's a bustle in your hedgerow, don't be alarmed now.
Very nice.
It's just a spring clean for the
May Queen? Something like that?
Whatever.
Now you owe them money. We can't air this episode.
Well, I don't know if that really counts as singing. That was, you know.
That's not playback.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I haven't heard my band.
Yeah.
Very close to singing. Or Leonard Cohen.
But, yeah, yeah. But I mean, I think Leonard Cohen gets those same criticisms. Yes, you're just reciting poems to music.
I love it.
But then afterwards...
the first rap. That's what I call him.
Leonard Cohen. Leonard Cohen is the first rapper. Yeah.
Curtis Blow, Lenny Go.
So black people were appropriating from
French Jews,
right?
Anglo Montreal Jews,
right?
Yeah.
So how'd you get come about? I'm always fascinated by this because being in a band, you know, there's always in the back of your head, you know, the moment you put out the album, you just know that there's a cycle, and once the cycle is over, you got to go back into the studio and write a bunch of tunes and record them. And so this is how we keep going. And I'm always interested by comedians. You fall into this category, as does Nick. Is you put out a record in 06. It's 2013 now, yeah. So that's seven years. I don't mean to sound like your mom,
but you've had TV appearances, right?
Yeah, that's the kind of thing. It was like I could have I've probably burned another album worth of material since then, and got another one, which I could do another one, and I've been meaning to, but it's just the kind of thing where it's like, well, that one's still selling, and it's like the hassle of recording another one, but it's like,
but here's
why?
My thing, yeah. It's like,
but it's not a ton
hassle,
of hassle.
Yeah, the hassle of recording a rock record is like...
Ten times.
Yeah, forget about it. Forget about recording the songs. It's loading the equipment in. Yeah. Takes a day. And all you guys got to do is set up the mics at a club, get your friend who moonlights as a engineer, yeah. and record it. As long as you have
the
material.
That was what I did.
You did that. Yeah. You had a label putting it out.
I did three shows. Did you do one show?
I did two. I did both shows on a Saturday.
And did you mix them together?
I did indeed, yeah.
And I did three shows, one of which was at a different location.
Oh, really? So yes. Sound was like all...
So that was a mistake that I made. But the fact it was three shows kind of made the fact that there was the one that was the mistake audio-wise not a huge deal.
Right.
But... Would you even do it? I almost think doing one show is like fine.
Yeah.
If you do like one show and you did an hour at the show and you were going to make it a 40-minute album and you cut it, yeah. You know? I mean, that's almost the same as doing two of like the identical hour or slightly different, because you're always going to have one that you prefer, and there is a different mood generally show to show, you know? And so it makes it, what I found was cutting it together became this painful thing almost, you know?
Well, I mean, for me, like, I would probably just do one show this time and let it stand. Like, whereas last time I was like, you know, I was really happy with both my performances, but it's like the audience was really into some stuff in the first show and really into other stuff in the other show. And so it's like,
that kinda makes it perfect.
I'll try and make it so it's all the best ones. But like now I would just be like, yeah, well, they didn't dig that one so much, but I'm still happy with the way I performed it. So here you go.
Reviews of my record would say, it's interesting that he kind of leaves in like when jokes that get no response. And I was like, but that's not that weird, is it?
No.
I mean, you're just trying to be accurate.
After died, I mean,
and also it's like
it's upwards and onwards from there.
In a way, I view that as the one kind of beautiful thing about presenting something after the fact. It's actually up to the listener to judge whether or not they think it's funny. They can actually go...
Well, that's the whole concept of what the laugh track was on sitcoms,
right?
It was prompting you to laugh.
Yeah.
And now we're in an age where Arrested Development and all these Parks and Recreation...
But it does sound like I'm really justifying why no one's laughing at my jokes. on the other hand.
But I mean, like,
I'm helping you out, man.
No, it's still like a joke that you believe. It's not like you decided after that joke bombing every time for like 10 months. Well, you know what? It's still going on the album. And it's like, no,
that in some cases.
I just saw Nick perform last week, and you had some sort of Paris Hilton joke, and you saved yourself in a really good way.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to blow it. But.
I did a joke that's actually on the record, which is sometimes I do that, where I'm like, I'll tell one of my really old jokes, and then people get interested. Yeah. But it was a Paris Hilton joke. Nobody laughed. And I was like, why? You guys don't get mad when bands, you hear a song from 2001 come on the radio, when the Strokes hits the radio, you're happy. When you hear the Vines.
Did you just come up with that on the spot?
Yes, I did.
That was a good one. Mm-hmm. That was really good. It's an interesting thing because, you know, we will have... It takes so much to just get into the studio and to record the songs and to write the songs, et cetera. Writing songs, coming up with like an hour's worth of material, a very similar process. But the execution in terms of recording it is quite different and easier for you guys. So, okay, so you set up the mics for two nights, three nights. It all bombs. Just do it again next week. Just book another two shows next week. Why don't you guys do that? Always banging
But nobody's doing... I mean, you're not... It's really rare that you're going to have a thing where you organize an album taping.
But bands play live. There's always recordings of every show of every band. You know, there's someone there. Why don't you guys record
a lot of your shows.
I do, like, for audio, just, like, on my phone. But, yeah, like, so the thing for me, too, is it's tough to get 45-minute spots around, you know? And it's like, if I book my own show... I could book my own show and promote it like crazy and still have zero people show. I mean, well, not zero, but I mean, like, have a few people show
up.
It's
not like a band.
Yeah. So in other words, the smartest thing to do sometimes when you're making an album is to somehow, I would say, is if you're doing a weekend at like a place you like going. I mean, and this isn't really a world like I participate in a lot. But it's like, yeah, if you're headlining somewhere that you know goes well every time, you would say, I'm also taping this for my record or whatever. Yeah. And that would be it. That's what people do sometimes. Or I really think the best thing you could do would be to, like, book kind of a no-brainer space, like a 30-person space.
Well, exactly,
Two shows. And because the intimacy is palpable a lot of the time at a good place. And, you know, it just is if you're in there with a lot of people, it's like, well, they might be intimidated by being so close to you into laughing whether or not they like it.
You're kind of bullying them into laughing.
In a weird way. I mean, you're not, but it's like, that's why I think those intimate shows or whatever feel really good is because there's some, if you are okay at what you do, there's like, and you create a connection, people will be more, it's easier to create a connection because it's smaller.
When did you put out your comedy album?
I think it came out 2 years ago.
And what's the name of it?
3 years ago.
What is it called again?
I'm Here All Week.
I'm Here All Week, right.
Oh, yes.
So this would be the time, if you were a band and you were on a label, that the label would come to you and say, okay, you know, it's X amount of months and the next one's coming out. Where are you at that stage? The two-year cycle is past now. Where are you? And then for you, Fraser, where are you? It's been 06 since 06, and you said you have enough material to come out with a one or two. Now, did you finance the first one yourself?
Yes.
And you sell it through your website?
Exactly, yeah, and on iTunes. And
so in terms of, like, money, I mean, there is more money from you that's getting put into a possible second album.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's... Like, because I've also all considered like just doing a DVD for the second one because I have some stuff that I do visually as well, like not like just I mean in terms of like with my hands and face, not like props or anything like that. But I was like, I might consider doing a DVD, and for me, like, that's, I'm always like wondering where, because I wouldn't want to do like a DVD taping at a club and have the club logo in behind me, you know? I mean, at a comedy club, I'd rather do it at, like, an independent.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the only reason why I'm pressing you is because we had Jason Rouse on a couple episodes ago, and this guy is, I mean, he's been doing it for so long, and he still doesn't have an album out. It was interesting to me to understand his process, and he just, you know, he's just been, you know, he has the material, obviously.
Well, exactly.
Oh, my God. But he just hasn't felt that it's up to the expectations that he set.
But was his special an hour, like, years ago? Was
the Comedy Now special?
So was that an hour
it
or
could
45
have been.
Minutes? I feel like it was. So you got that. That's 45 minutes. Do you have one of those?
Yeah, but I mean, like, I taped, like, around the same time as Jason. Like, I taped mine in 2000.
So, yeah,
like,
so that none was, of that stuff is
exactly. That's
anymore.
I mean, that's none of that even remotely resembles me. Mine was just a half hour.
I just
hour.
Bought this Beck album. It's
but it's like,
hey, anybody here heard the band Woof Mother? Woof Mother.
My thing is, like,
Fraser Young.
I think it's wonderful.
It's just imitating.
How's it going? I love that I'm just giggling in between hays. Yeah. Much like you.
Yeah, no, that's
when you deliver it.
That's basically what I do.
Okay, now I can't tell who's the real Fraser.
It's
so spot
best
on.
Fraser. It's just the two of us in here.
Sorry,
no worries. But I would say, like when I was in 2000, you know,
can't
I was
look at you when I
was 23, and so, like, a lot of my jokes were basically, like, I was living up with my parents in Newmarket, so my jokes were a lot about like driving and living with my parents, you know, because I've been coming down to Toronto
a lot. You're sick of breakfast in bed. You're sick of having breakfast, mother bringing breakfast every day.
I feel when you deliver your comedy, you're just about to use so many swear words.
Yeah.
You have to hold back.
I mean, like, I swear here and there.
I swear up there.
Yeah, but I don't.
Yeah, but it's not, you're not a dirty comic.
Yeah, no. Like I try, it's more just like casual swearing, which yeah. I think I do, like, I'll rely on it sometimes. Like, if I could tell, oh, it's a bit of like a younger crowd and they're kind of drunk, I'll throw a few more swears in there, and afterwards I'll be like, that's so cheap. Why did I? You know, it's like you let the material stand. You know,
right?
I mean, like, there's swearing written into the material as well. But I mean, right. I like when I really spice
That's
it
different.
Up. You know
That's
exactly
different.
It.
Well, I had someone say the funniest thing to me after that show on Tuesday. Oh, my God. He was like, that was great tonight. Anyway, bye, guys. And, that was great tonight. You know, honestly, I see you, like, all the time, and I would say, like, 4 out of 12 times, it is awesome. I was like, you know, I mean, with the amount of overthinking.
I don't know how to take that.
How do you work with that, right? Because, like, with maybe the way your brain works, maybe all of us, there's this element where it's like you kind of want to be awesome all the time.
But he made an effort, or maybe it wasn't just for you, but he's seen you 12 times.
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, this guy's awesome. This guy's
12 times.
This guy is a great guy. And of course, what he really means is like, oh, well, like, I like it 8 times, and then the other 4 are really great. And I'm like,
8 times, good solid B, and then the other 4 times, A plus.
And then, but you know, where your head goes is like, I just want to be A plus all the time. Yeah. You know, which is maybe getting into why putting out a record is so hard, because getting to that A plus point with comedy is crazy, you know, and that's what you want your album to be ultimately.
Oh, like it's all hits, and everyone's like, I can't believe it. Each one better than the next.
Were you happy with your record?
I was really happy with it.
And it's a great album.
No, thank you.
But here's the problem that I think I can pinpoint with all you guys, including Jason Rouse, is that you guys stand alone. You aren't in a band. You don't have other cooks in the kitchen. So it's just you, and you overthink things. And you, even though you get tired of a joke, the way a band gets tired of a song, you gotta play "Smells Like Teen Spirit." If you're Nirvana, you know you got to do that. At the end of the night, Van Halen has to play "Jump."
Yeah.
And being that you're a team of one, you can easily just go, I'm not going to play "Jump" tonight.
Yeah.
And that only serves you. At that moment, but really the bigger picture is there should be somebody telling you, you have to sing "Happy Birthday" tonight. You have to play "Smells Like Teen Spirit" tonight, or "Enter Sandman," because that's what's. But you're tired of it, but everybody loves it, and I find that you guys as comedians, as like I said, a team of one. Just lose sight of that. You need another cook in the kitchen sometimes, I think.
That's
a sounding board.
What half
More
of what
than
I love
a sounding board.
About stand-up, though, is that I get to make all the decisions. And but there's also the kind of thing that's like, if something messes up, I don't have anyone else to blame. I'm not mad at someone else because they dropped the ball and didn't do this or that. It's like, if this went poorly, it's because of something I did on my own, and suck it up and move on and do it better next time.
That's a great attitude.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because when I do something wrong, I go, that was all my fault.
Yeah.
And then it's curling in a ball for like 6 months.
Yeah. Oh, but it's like I've done like sketch stuff in that like too, and it's like, you know, we put together like a sketch show, and it's like, well, why are we doing this one and this? It's like, oh, this, and then they go and they bomb, and it's like, yeah, I knew they were gonna bomb. And then meanwhile, some of mine have messed up as well, but it's like, the feeling of letting other people down, I don't like, and the feeling of being let down, I don't like. So it's like, this is it. It all rides on me. I get to make all the decisions, all the blame.
And you're not let down when you fuck up because you think to yourself, okay, I just gotta. Tomorrow's another day.
Sometimes I'll get mad at myself if it's something where it's like, because I have longer pieces as well. Like, I mean, I have some short stuff, but like a lot of it is kind of longer pieces. And I'll go through, and it's like a 2-minute bit, and there's laughs all the way. But then I'll just totally blow the punchline, and it's like, oh, you asshole! Who's so gonna be so good? Like, the audience was just right, and you just dropped the ball right at the very end.
How weird!
It's like, I will get vocally like fake angry at myself on stage, and it will usually, you know, result in a laugh. But it's just like, because the audience at least appreciates. But this, it's still not the same. Like, if you had nailed it, it would have been such a crest of laughs, like, so coming through so well.
Switching gears here, how has the transition from just, like you said, you kind of got the call from your agent to join the CBC crew here.
Yeah.
How is the transition from, you know, working by yourself as a stand-up comic to working on a team, being a team of writers? Like, Nick, you also write for television, but even then you're by yourself.
Which Fraser also used to do that as well.
Yeah, like I used to write for some sitcoms and stuff as well, like some teen sitcoms, and then like a grown-up, an adult sitcom as well. But it's great to do in terms of like building on other people's ideas. Like that's great when you're like at the beginning of the season and you're pitching ideas around for like say like stories or something like that, and then someone has an idea like this, and then it's just build all the way through there. It can be frustrating when it's like, I want this joke going in here, and then like the showrunner, like whoever's in charge, it's their show, and it's like, well, no, we're gonna do this, and you're like, well, I mean, that's well, what can I say? I think
it's not your child,
yeah,
really,
exactly.
I mean,
yeah, well, that's what it is. But it is, it's fun. It's also interesting writing in someone else's voice because my voice is very distinct. Like I talk different than people do.
Hey,
and so,
what's up?
Yeah, exactly. So when it's writing for someone else, it's like, okay, I also never write down any of my material. Like I just title it. I walk around and just do it over and over in my head until I'm comfortable enough, and then
Do you ever walk into poles and stuff?
No, I have my eyes open the whole time.
I used to do that with lyrics.
Yeah.
You never wrote them down?
No.
It's annoying. Like, it's so weird. Like, when I have to, like, if I'm doing like a festival, I did.
I do now, though.
Yeah.
I do now.
I did a couple of festivals last year, and, like, to get it on TV, you have to submit, like, the written version of your jokes, and I'm, like, typing it out, and I'm like, so because I don't write the way that I talk. Like, it's much more
formal.
Yeah, it's like I'm really, like, you know, the point of writing is to get it, you know, sharp and tight and all that. And so I'm, like, writing it out, and I'm writing it the way that I say it. I'm like, well, this looks stupid on paper. But trust me, it works when I'm talking about it, you know?
I mean, have you had, that's a really interesting thing that you're talking about, which is this shift as you go on in your like, how you write and all that kind of stuff is interesting. I mean, do you find yourself writing down stuff more at this point, or is it all still in your head?
No, it's all. I mean, like, I write down ideas for jokes. Like, I'll write down, hey, doing a podcast with three guys. And then it's like, oh, yeah.
That can go a lot of different ways.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
I do that, too. When we're even to this day, I only start writing it when I have to sing the songs or present the songs to the guys in the studio so everybody can follow along.
Right.
Then I'll write it out. But if it was just me, it's all in my head.
Like, for me, I always get, like,
I prefer writing on stage now.
I often do that, but I'm not that great at it. Like, I need to have at least, like, goalposts of where I'm getting to.
Yeah.
Because if I go up with a premise and then try and, like, a lot of my stuff is also, like, story-based and that this thing happened to me.
Yeah.
So if I go there and I have like the story without how I'm going to make it funny, and I'm not going to be able to come up with it, you know?
You don't have that gun to your head mentality on stage, you know, where the fact that you're just under that pressure to deliver to these people.
You know, I think you came up with this way from being in bands.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Because that's a similar feeling I get when we're about to go on stage. It's that nervousness that I know everybody feels it, but that gun to the head kind of pressure is
possible.
That's something I
mean, my first addressing of crowds would be in between songs, much like you, Dinko, like in between songs. And I would always try to say something weird and or funny.
Yeah.
And you know, that's maybe a mentality I'm trying to keep going. But I also think what you're talking about is totally right. Like, those goalposts, like, you kind of need to have a punchline, even if it's a silly, like, just a save, you know?
Yeah.
Like, just, like, to get you out of it. You need that just to wrap something up.
And it's the kind of thing, like, where I can spritz with the crowd, you know, just, like, talk it back and forth. And I'm not at all, like, I'll get laughs out of that. But that's usually just, like, short, boom, boom, boom. But if I'm trying to, craft a bit, then it's like just going up without an idea of where I'm going. I can't really weave the story, you know?
Well, the last time Carlin came to Toronto, I was in the crowd. He played in We're at Thompson Hall.
Yeah.
And the guy, he must have had the flu. He was really, really sick. You can hear it in his voice.
I got the flu.
But you know how Carlin does it, much like, Carlin. I think, was that your George Carlin imitation?
I'm George Carlin. I'm the very old George Carlin, and I'm angry. I'm angry at death.
It's like I'm in here with Rich Little.
I know. You didn't know. I'm the man of one voice.
Not George Carlin, but Rich Little.
I feel like I'm here with a disgraced impressionist.
Was Rich Little a disgraced impressionist?
I feel like nobody is really willing, you know.
I think disgraced is too strong.
Was
I
he on the boat with Natalie Wood? but anyways, so I saw Carlin, and
he was really
very, very sick. Probably had the flu, and you could hear it in his voice. But I was so surprised, and everybody knows the process that by now, if you're a comedy head, you know the process that he went through. Much like how I guess Louis C.K. has kind of taken that torch of just like going through the process and then shitting it out and then starting over again, and. He was in the middle of that when he came to Toronto. He came out with all his notes on a table. I don't know if you guys knew this, and he would just turn the notes, and you know he would reference the notes. And for someone who's I'd never seen him live before, I've always seen the finished product, the end of that whole process. I mean, we've all seen that Seinfeld movie, Comedian.
Right.
Yes.
But, man, Jerry Seinfeld never brought notes. And I consider Carlin, like, he's the master.
Yeah.
Well, but they're very different types of masters.
But like, I mean, to bring, like, pages, it's just kind of like, you know.
He's 71, man. What does he care? That's, I mean, at that point, every vibe I got, the vibe I got from Carlin. Me,
yeah.
What the TV sent to
wait,
me?
Do it as
secret message. I don't care about. I do impressions for the last like six podcasts. By the way, I have done at least one impression. This
of
is
me.
Crazy. I don't think I've ever done it. Did I do a Danko Jones impression?
You've done the last two podcast episodes. You've done a different impression of me. Two totally different impressions.
Hey, what's up? I'm Danko Jones. Welcome to the Danko Jones podcast.
That's that was spot
one,
on.
That was one.
I've done that already. But no, what I mean is I think that, you know, because he really broke down all kinds of, like, he invented style, like, two or three different styles, I feel, in the 70s stuff. Yeah. Like, it was really, really good stuff. And then by the 80s, you kind of saw this weird anger. The angry guy was kind of becoming the main thing.
It's awesome.
And then by the 90s, it was like even more. And I mean, what's the natural genesis of like a really, really angry comedian as he ages? It's like, whatever. I'm just gonna do this.
But I don't think he. I don't think he brought those notes on stage because he could get away with it because he's now a curmudgeon. He's officially a curmudgeon. I really feel that this is the process that he was doing.
Yeah.
Whether it was the tail end of his career or the middle. I mean,
but you think that if you'd seen him in 1974 in the middle of a tour, he would have had a table.
I have a feeling it would have been like that. Maybe by bringing the notes on, he was basically saying, "Hey guys, I'm fucking George Carlin." You know, I'm the master.
I gotta say, I think to some extent there is that.
I can shit on the stage and you'll fucking applaud. Yeah.
What do you think, Fraser?
I think it's like along those. I mean, I think that when people come to Toronto, when comics come to Toronto, they're not necessarily gearing up for that to be at their peak level. Like,
we're routing stop.
Yeah, well, I've heard a lot of people who heard you went and you know shelled out $100 to see this guy play Toronto or that guy play Toronto, and they're like, yeah, there was some stuff that was funny and some stuff that was kind of. It's like, yeah, well, I mean,
he's working.
He's testing stuff out, getting ready for a giant special that he's going to do.
Which
and
I,
so,
I love. Yeah. It's just that Carlin brought out the notes, and I loved it because I'm a huge. I'm the biggest Carlin fan ever, and
I think it's good that he did that because I think that for you know just to train people to accept that is good, you know, because in the end there's such a wide range of performance styles in comedy, and if you're sort of presenting that and someone who's like a voice like that is doing that, well, you know, that's good.
Yeah, but you know, it was Roy Thompson Hall, which is kind of a she venue, and people, you know, the symphony plays there, etc. You're kind of used to, you know, like a cello quartet doing some sort of piece.
I think Mitch Hedberg used notes a lot, too.
Yes. But people who go there, people who attend those venues, they expect a certain level. And I'm not saying that that's a really bad thing to do or a lower thing to do. I'm just saying that unprofessional thing to do. I'm just saying that it was surprising, even though I've never seen anyone at that level do that in Toronto at a venue like Roy Thomson Hall.
I think the only guys who played Roy Thomson Hall, I think, were like Carlin and now Cosby. Like, I don't know if anyone gets played very much
of Roy Thomson Hall.
Like, you have to be like the, because I don't even know if they allow like other comics to, like, you know, and hey, just so do Massey Hall. You know?
He told like an incest daughter sucking the dad's cock joke. Yeah. Like, I think it was his second joke.
See, this is what I'm saying. Like, I don't
give a shit.
I don't know if 1971 George Carlin. I mean, I remember. This year I watched his two pieces on death, the one from like 1978 or whatever, and then the one from the late 90s, and they were just so different.
Right.
And one of them was this wonderful, poetic, and it felt like it was full of life. This is the 70s one. And the other one was this one that, I don't even remember what he said, but it was, to me it amounted to like, just kill me. there's nothing after.
You could really see, like, I was looking around.
Why do I keep doing that?
The lights weren't totally dark. You know, you could see the audience, and I was looking at the audience, and it was cut down the line of the people who like, you know, A Place for My Stuff and the Seven Words You Can't Say to You Were All Diseased and all the later end stuff where he was just going like, fuck you, let's all just fucking die and all that shit. And the daughter sucking the dad's cock joke was received by all the A Place for My Stuff fans, like they couldn't believe that this old man was saying these crass things.
Right.
It was quite interesting, and I loved how he played with the perceptions of the audience that way.
Yeah. Oh, and because he certainly isn't there to please the audience. You know, he's there to perform his act, and I'm sure he hopes that you enjoy it. But that's not the point of it. Like, the point of it is to get out these thoughts.
He has the luxury once again of being George Carlin.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
But he's also someone who, this is kind of interesting, right? He fell in love with a certain way of crafting it, and he just sort of kept doing that, you know?
Which is why I mentioned Louis C.K., because I think he's come up with his own craft. And Jim Gaffigan, these guys just like, you know, they make a snowman, and then they topple the snowman down.
Right.
I mean, you hear some of these guys now. Aziz Ansari is in every interview, you know, sort of trying. He's obsessed with the same kind of thing. Obviously not necessarily being as heavy as those guys, but of producing material at a pretty
an hour a year
something. I don't think it evens out to quite that much, and neither does Gaffigan, because an hour a year is crazy. You know, I mean, the fact that Louis C.K.
like
can
a polished hour, like to even like write an hour. Well, I mean, like write an hour of material a year. There's probably a lot of people do that, but I mean, like for me, if I write an hour of material, I got maybe 10-15 minutes out of it. You know,
I feel the same way. I mean, I can't. I've been performing half-hour sets. That's the longest I do. It's like 35 minutes, you know? And I've been doing it for years. But it's like, I honestly, to get it to the point where I would feel comfortable doing an hour or 45, which it will get to that point. I'm just giving it a lot of time because I don't want to waste anyone's time, you know? Like, and but I don't know what got in Louis C.K.'s, how he was really able to pull that off, except for the fact that he obviously has his own internal logic that he is able to have get all of his jobs. I mean, this is a guy who went from like, he was doing stand-up the whole time and was also directing movies and doing pilots and developing and writing and, you know, I don't know. I mean, and I'm sure he'd have a very simple answer for it if you were to ask him.
He probably cuts out all of the time wasters in his life. Like, I doubt he's very good at video games. I suspect he, you know, probably doesn't watch that much TV. He makes it.
A closer look at, you know, like, uber achievers will get you those, you know, observations. I really think that someone like Louis C.K., reached a level, and it doesn't work for everybody, but if you reach a certain level, there's something that unlocks in your unconscious, and you can ride that wave.
Yeah, I think that's,
you know,
true
that
too.
He's riding, like, not a lot of people can do it, no matter how talented they are. Like, Eddie Murphy couldn't do it, you know, but he just Chris Rock couldn't do it.
Yeah, but Chris Rock works at least he works hard to get those hours every few years, you know.
Yeah, but maybe I'm wrong, but doesn't Louis C.K.'s material come from Louis C.K.?
Yes. Do you mean how Chris Rock has to get like a bunch of people to bounce?
Chris Rock is Louis C.K. and like Nick DiPaolo.
But I don't think those guys are writing his act. I think he's bouncing it off of them. And,
sure.
And frankly, I think that's one thing in stand-up that I've actually come to appreciate lately is bouncing our ideas off of other people and getting stuff from them. I'm not afraid to do that.
I think Chris Rock will do a show and he's got like not necessarily like Nick DiPaolo falling around, but like other comics that are opening for him, stuff like that, mm-hmm. who are just like, boom, all right, here's a tag, yeah. we can add to this one, this and that. And so it's like, you can polish
I don't think
like
he's
a 10-minute
any less of a
in,
comedian.
Oh,
yeah,
phenomenal.
He's a great
comedian.
Yeah, he's one of the greats.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really sure. I think I get a bit nervous about deifying anybody, you know? Like, man, I don't think that's like even something.
But, Louis C.K., at this point in time, 2013, he is really the top comedian.
Yeah, that's 100%.
In terms of popularity, respect, and process.
Yeah. But you've got those ventriloquists nipping at his heels.
Jeff Dunham.
Yeah. Terry Fator. Never forget that guy. He's second
most popular
concert act.
Maybe you guys should think about, about changing it up.
Would you? Could I be your dummy?
Oh, yeah, man.
I think it would be, you wanted to.
Hi, I'm Nick.
You wanted to turn this podcast into a brainstorming session. We just did it for you, man. When you're working on the team here at CBC and you're throwing stuff out.
Yeah.
Have you ever lobbed a couple of jokes over and while you're lobbing it, you're going, I want that for myself. And then they don't use it. Do you squirrel it away?
You know what? Actually, there was like last year when we were pitching stories, there was this story that about a guy in North Carolina who accidentally drank gasoline and then spit it out all over himself and then didn't change. And then lit a cigarette and died. And they're like, well, that's probably a little dark for us to discuss on the story. But I had the joke, or like in the morning meeting, had the joke all in it. We boom, 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 boom. And then they turned that down. They're like, you know, it's a little dark. And it's a little dark for TV.
Sure.
But then I went and did that at Winnipeg Comedy Festival, and it killed. Like, I turned it into my
own. Is it yours?
Yeah, exactly.
It's officially yours?
It's mine, yeah. Well, like, I think in theory, if they really wanted to be sticklers about it, they could say, oh, no, that's anything you pitch here is ours. You can't touch it. But George is totally cool.
Yeah, he's George
not,
seems like
he's not. He's not going to be like, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. It's
Fraser, I'm working on my comedy album.
Yeah, exactly. You know, yeah.
Picking up off the floor of what you
so they're giving in that. It's like, yeah, they don't own anything. Just, you know, don't do it before it gets here, you know? I mean, like, also, like, anything that goes on TV here, I never touch at all myself.
You couldn't really do that, could you?
No.
No,
that would be the saddest.
That's
exactly,
understood.
Exactly. You know, yeah.
Didn't I hear that on like infotainment show the other day? Wait.
What?
I have a Tumblr.
You
NickFlanagan.tumblr.com.
I'll just plug it in the,
oh,
in
nice.
The intro.
So yeah, you applied for that and were accepted. And
I applied for the Tumblr and I just got my Tumblr approved.
That's amazing.
My internet work visa. I don't know. I'm trying to my web visa. Don't worry about it.
Can I go now?
No.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna put a shirt on.
Well, thanks, Fraser. Thanks a lot for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. That was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Fraser.
Say the word and I'll take it out.